Hi, I'm Katrina Onstad, and I'm reading from my book, How Happy to Be. This is a scene wherein Max, our narrator, drugged up, sexed up, self-destructive entertainment reporter, looks back at a seminal moment in her childhood on the commune in BC where her father takes her after her mother's somewhat gruesome death. So to anyone who finds this girlhood among the unwashed romantic, I always say, permissiveness comes with so many rules, so much disapproval. They're just less spoken, meaning you navigate them blindfolded. I wore fishbowl headphones to listen to ABBA or Blondie so as not to pollute the living space, but Bob Dylan was permitted to moan endlessly from the speaker. If you really wanted out, it was simple to float away. The trick was to make it look purposeful. While the grown-ups did their thing, planting the vegetables that never really grew because people with degrees in Marxist philosophy don't make good farmers, and talking, I would hitchhike across the water and spend hours in the drugstore reading Tiger Beat, tucking the good issues in the waistband of my pants and walking out slowly, smiling, because if you look happy like that, you can get away with anything. Then in the evening, I'd sit on the fence at the local drive-in staring at the whiz, imagining lyrics to songs I couldn't hear without a speaker. Sometimes I would bully a smaller, snot-encrusted kid into acting as sidekick. These kids were too hyper to sit still and too close to their parents to be good liars, so usually I went off alone. I escaped house meetings to hide in the woods with my magazines and pinups circling the addresses of fan clubs. I discovered that the farm down the road had a tidy blonde family in it and a girl in a skirt who was nearly my age. I watched TV there constantly and began to skip out on the things I used to love. Getting the shit-streaked eggs from screaming chickens, milking the cows. I had fallen for Jacqueline Smith, the silkiest of Charlie's Angels, and also, in my estimation, the smartest. Her character was called Kelly, a name like mine, a name for a boy or a girl. Maybe we could be friends. The back of the milk truck was littered with my dad's tools and thinning Mexican carpets. Without windows, I could go unseen in there. I got out my thesaurus and wrote, "Dear Ms. Smith, because I never knew Miss or Mrs. existed. I find your show superlative. Your hair is very comely. How did you become an actress? Will you write me, please?" On the envelope, I wrote the return address, Rural Route 1, Gambier Island, British Columbia, Canada. I didn't notice the doors opening, my father a half foot back, tentative. He stared at the envelope. "Who are you writing?" "Nobody." I shoved the letter in the pocket of my hemp flares, the ones the draft dodgers brought across the border like offerings to the families that protected them. My dad nodded, but he looked sad. "I respect your privacy," he said slowly. Then he thought about this and revised it. "But we shouldn't have secrets." More thinking, a condition I could identify by the wrinkles curling out from the corners of his eyes. My dad is so biologically slow that any mental exertion registers across his face like a piece of paper crumpling. "You think about it." "Mm-hmm." "And tell me later." "A direct order? Impossible." "If you want," he added. "That's better." It was one of those cyclical moments of parenting at which my dad excelled. I nodded, then he held out a fuzzy mass, seemingly offering me a dead cat. "I made you something," he said, placing the object in my hand. It was rough and knit from yellow yarn with a pink explosion of ribbon on its head and two red buttons for eyes. "Elaine showed me how to knit," he said very quickly, looking away. "What is it?" I asked, instantly realizing I sounded cruel. I added, "It's nice." "It's Holly Hobby, you know, that girl with the bonnet and the skirt." I turned it over in my hand. The skirt was a square of dish towel. "You said you wanted one, remember?" I nodded. "Thank you," I said. I'd asked for Holly Hobby a year ago. Now she was over. I had developed an acute sense of fashionable timing that would have shocked my father. My dad stood shuffling and made a quick gesture toward me with his hand like he was reaching out for something, maybe trying to take back the present. Then he halted, shoving his fists in the pockets of his pants, the belt around his skinny hips puckered and sagging, a dad in a drawstring bag. "Thank you," I said again. I don't usually tell it like that. I just described the grotesque felt pen grin on Holly's face. Many laughs ensue. Lucky you, true version.